Where Nobody Knows Your Name is not recorded in front of a live studio audience. Hello and welcome to Where Nobody Knows Your Name, a Cheers podcast. I'm John.
And I'm James.
And James, we are reviewing an excellent episode. It's a good fun one.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's No Rest for the Woody. 9th of January, 1992, season 10, episode 14, directed by James Burrows and written by Tracy Newman and Jonathan Stark. That's it's not all the title. That's some episode details as well for you.
That'd
there. Admin, out the way.
A long title card if it was the whole thing. Yeah. Just wall to wall of like orangey-yellow font.
Yeah, it would be like a Borat movie, wouldn't it? Where they had that ridiculously long
Star Wars scroll on that, I reckon, for the episode.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed this episode. I think when Woody's in the title, you know it's going to be a good one. And as we sort of come to expect with an episode with Woody in the title or a reference to him, we get to see Kelly normally in these episodes.
Kelly! Kill it, baby. Yes.
and the rest of the Gaines family as well. And I was not disappointed this episode because we get to even go to the Gaines estate, I'm going to call it. I don't think it's ever called that.
It's pretty accurate, though.
It's a fancy place.
Yeah, it's, I would imagine, one of the nicer or more prolific areas of Boston, such as Harvard.
And it kind of follows on quite directly from a fine French wine.
Mm.
I was going to say a French wine.
A French? Extra French.
It follows on from a fine French wine where we ended the episode with Woody proposing to Kelly.
Yes.
So we know we're in sort of a poignant part of Woody and Kelly's sort of relationship at the moment.
Yeah, very much so. And it's primarily about Woody not revealing that they're engaged, but it's having the whole family round to celebrate the fact, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the build up to that engagement party where they've announced it to people, but they've not celebrated yet.
Yeah.
So we're in for a celebration this episode. But before we get into the main episode, we've got to talk about the cold open, James.
The bar is closed.
Yeah, which is a sight we don't often see, like a totally empty bar.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't remember the last time we saw that.
Hi, this is Cheers. Leave a message at the beep.
Norm, this is Vera. Please pick up.
Hi, this is Cheers. Leave a message at the beep.
Norm, I know you're there. Pick up the phone, Norm. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I want you to come home. Norm? Norm?
Hi, this is Cheers. Leave a message at the beep.
Hi, Sam. This is Vera Peterson again. Listen, ignore those messages. It turns out Norm was here in bed next to me the whole time. And I thought that big lump was our dog. Who knew?
There's no pause in that dial.
Nope. Voicemail, this is it, and then another one.
A classic intro. How big's that dog?
First time they mentioned their dog in years. You know, what do you think it is? A kind of an Alaskan Malamute type thing?
Nah, I feel like sort of, I don't know, I feel like Norm would have quite a sort of...
I feel Norm would have a big dog. I feel they have a dog that he could kind of ruffle the face off. He's not going to have a Chihuahua, is he?
I feel like it's a dog which shouldn't be as big as it is, though. Do you know what I mean? Where we used to go for walks around the sort of, it's called the Avenues, but it's sort of a slightly high brow area where we live. We didn't live there, but we used to walk around it, and there was this dog, and he was, I don't know what type of dog he was, but he's got a very long face. But I don't think his hair wasn't cut very often, and he was huge, but he shouldn't be huge.
I think Norm's dog is Rolf from the Muppets. The piano player. I think that's the most accurate thing I could think of, you know. I think you could mistake the two quite easily if they weren't talking, you know, and it was dark.
I think like a Basset Hound kind of dog, but that hasn't been walked a lot, so it's got quite big. And its face is extra droopy. That's what I'm picturing. That's what Vera's mistaking for Norm, I reckon.
Answers on a postcard. What?
But anyway, that's our cold open, which is a short and sweet one, which makes us know we've got a busy episode ahead.
I think Woody, if he was a dog, would be a golden retriever. I don't think that's in question.
No, I think that's very, very true, yeah.
easy answer there. But yes, busy episode ahead, big family episode as well. Lovely stuff.
But how do we kick off the main episode, James?
Well, the furnace is out, stopped working, and they need to call a repairman.
Yeah, which this is very much the B-plot of this episode. This is sort of Rebecca's story in this episode. She doesn't get much involved with Woody's engagement party, but this is sort of her main thing, along with Carla. They sort of had a bit of a feud about it of sorts, but Rebecca's calling up, talk to the repair man over the phone. It's kind of going nowhere. She needs to go and investigate about the furnace model and things like that. So she takes the grate off the wall and goes sort of John McClane, crawls inside.
Yes, exactly like John McClane. Go to the coast, have a few laughs. Now I'm a manager in some underground bar.
But yeah, so she's in the walls.
Basically, she's going in there with the phone, you know, on the phone with the repairman, saying what the issues are. Carla, drills the grate shut, and she goes, "Ha, joke's on you, Carla. I'm just going to call the police." So what does Carla do?
Cuts the cord.
She does indeed.
It takes Rebecca out of action for a bit for this episode, but before she's totally out of action, Woody does come in with Kelly with a bag on her hand, a brown paper bag over her hand, because they're going to reveal the ring. And Rebecca does ask Kelly directly, like, goes, "Well, what's with the bag?" And she goes, "Oh, we're going to do a grand reveal of the ring." And sort of Woody goes, "Great, you've undercut the moment. You've revealed the reveal."
When my sister revealed she was engaged, I don't think she made much of a moment of it. She just came down and went, "Hey, mum, and what?" And she just held up her hand and went, "I'm engaged." Easy. Done.
My sister messaged a lot saying, "You need to call me. You need to call me. You need to call me." But it was at night.
So you were like, nah.
I was in bed. And then so it was lots of messages of, "You need to call, you need to call." And then it was like, "Everything's all right, by the way."
Woke up, like, "Oh no, she stopped messaging at this point at 2 a.m. What's wrong?" But yeah, both of us have the respective weddings later this year. Much like Woody. Coincidence? I think not.
Yeah. But yeah, so they're excited to show the ring, and Norm and Cliff are excited because they see the bag on the hand and thought a puppet show was going to happen.
I would have loved a puppet show. You seem like someone who had puppets growing up. Not like real made puppet, but like, you know, toy
puppets.
It
feels like a slight sort of backhanded compliment kind of thing.
It's a compliment. Wasn't meant
you,
backhanded.
You feel like the guy who...
You seem like a puppet, man. You're like little toy puppets that you may have got from the carnival.
And I've said this story a few times, and people always look at me very confused, but I used to get taken out of classes to go into like I don't know what you'd call it, like a sort of a sidebar to the classroom where me and some other kids would learn how to make sandwiches with a puppet who would teach us.
How? Puppets don't have thumbs.
No, like the TA, the assistant teacher, would use the puppet to teach us how to make a sandwich. So we learned how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich whilst everyone else was doing, like, English.
Is this due to dyslexia?
Yeah. I don't see how that helps, you know.
It didn't help, you know.
The words confuse him. Let the puppet explain how to make a sandwich.
Let Punch and Judy make a sandwich for him. Yeah.
He won't function in society, but at least he can make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah, but it's just worse that when the puppet's not there, you panic. Yeah, no, I didn't have that. I had things that I was taking out of class for coordination stuff. But not a puppet in sight. No public class, but we did get puppets from small toy shops or something. Not the authentic sooty, but a sooty puppet.
So it's nutty.
No, but it was called sooty, but you know, it was...
I thought it was like an off-brand sooty.
It was sooty, but in very small print, not official. I don't mind a puppet. I think the cute animal ones, fine. I think the very humanoid ones, which, you know, are used for spookiness... Not as much as a fan of. I appreciate and admire the skill of the puppeteers, but I wouldn't want one myself, you know.
We have a family puppet.
Can you elaborate?
More of like an heirloom, but he's a creepy puppet.
Right.
Very, very creepy puppet. He's got a little hat. He's got wildly ginger hair. And his eyes are the ones where, like, you know, they're not controlled by anything other than gravity.
Oh, like a googly eye type thing.
No, like sort of you know, where you lean him forward and his eyes will blink.
Oh.
He's a scary puppet. Well, we got a lot of that. They said, "Oh, we thought there was a puppet show," and that's what we've latched on to.
We had a lot to milk from the word puppet, didn't we?
Three more goes like this and we've got a no context
Yeah.
I'll send you a picture of the puppet.
Of course you will. Of course you will. Sam offers to give his employees a group medical plan. He was initially hesitant, but apparently it's the law now.
It's shadowed as a nice thing to do, and then quickly revealed that it's just a legal requirement. The plan has to cover, I assume, what, 5 people?
And a certain amount of people need to qualify for the group rate, so you get it at a discounted rate for more people or something like that. Paul volunteers because Paul lives in fear of being hurt and doesn't have insurance.
I get why he wants the insurance. And Sam's as a very open invite, but very presumptuous of Paul.
Yeah, and logically it would have been Norm because he's not a full-time staff member, but he has been their accountant at times.
And their painter at times.
Yeah.
To qualify for the group rate, I need one more person to sign on.
Thank God, Sam. You don't know what it's like to walk around uninsured, knowing you might get hit by a bus or need an operation, and they take your house and your savings, and that might not even be enough. You saved my life, Sam.
Actually, Paul, I was kind of thinking of offering it to Norm.
Hey, congratulations, Norm.
What we do know is that there is a party at the Gaines estate.
Wood has a nice ring. Have your parents seen it yet?
No, they will in a couple days. They're going to throw us an engagement party.
Party.
Oh, cool. Her grandmother's even coming all the way from Florida. She's kind of the head of the family. From what I hear, she's pretty scary. She's bossy, mean, and tough as nails. You wouldn't want to mess with her.
Yeah, bet your mama can take her. Gloves or bare fist, open hand, close hand, I don't care.
Well, I've drawn up a list of names of the people I want to invite to the party. The only problem is I only get to invite a few. Where do you draw the line?
Woody has to cut down the list of invitees.
This is a brilliant moment because Fraser comes over as a kind of authority of going like, when me and Lilith are making parties, we just start from the bottom of the list of who we don't want. Makes it much easier kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Woody goes, thanks, Dr. Crane. You're not invited.
To be fair, Fraser has a bad track record for arranging parties, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's not the best. And well, either, you know what? He puts a lot of effort in and you can't ever take that away from him. 10 out of 10 on effort. Every time, Fraser. 10 out of 10.
All I know is I had a wonderful time, and you can't take that away from me.
He tries his best.
Yes, yeah.
Above and beyond. Just never sticks the landing, I'd say.
A plus for effort, a solid D for execution.
Yeah. But this is his advice to Woody, and he takes it on board. And he has to slim down who he can invite to the Gaines family celebration engagement party for him and Kelly. And he's talking to both Cliff and Norm, who are invited as his friends, but they're asking about the wedding ring, because it's a very nice ring. They ask how much it was. The conversation around sort of class is a big conversation in Cheers, and I think the Woody Kelly dynamic is something that they use to explore it a lot.
Yep.
And this cost of a wedding ring is one of the biggest expenses a couple
of his life.
Yeah, of his life. I think the only thing that would top it would be a home and maybe the wedding itself.
So, Woodzo, how much do your ring set you back?
Well, they say when you buy an engagement ring, you're supposed to spend the equivalent of 6 months' salary, but look kind of naked without a diamond in it.
So, how much are we talking? Over a grand or what?
Well, the salesman said that it's bad luck for the couple to know how much the ring costs.
Long time back, I bought some precious stones, genuine amber, I think it was. But here is the trick, John. I bought it in Poland, so it was a quarter of the price because of the exchange rate, you see.
James haggles as well.
Because I'm from London.
James and his slotties. Slotties?
Slotties.
I was so scared when I was in Poland because the price I just couldn't work out in my head, because every time I'd go for a meal, I was like, this is so expensive. The numbers are so big. And then you pay it. I look back and I was like, that was £5 or something.
Yeah, pint's 20p.
Yeah, it's like, it was nuts. But I was so scared to spend any money that when I got back, I just had most of it still anyway.
Yeah.
It was only the last night that when we sort of did a blowout and realized we had all of our money left.
I had a strange interaction. I was at a bar and it was in Bydgoszcz, which is not the most touristic place. So therefore, there was a language barrier because I spoke no Polish. Only the swear words. And, the bartender, she spoke very little English. So she poured half a pint into a pint glass, then stopped, looked me dead in the eyes and went, I must go. And just left, the building. And I like to think that outside she saw a kind of Batman type symbol, but it was shining a pint glass.
That sounds like a weird experience.
It was. And then I just stood there and I was like, do I just take it? Because I hadn't paid, you know.
What did you do?
I waited until someone came back and poured the rest of the pint. which I felt was the middle ground, you know. We both get what we want. Yeah. I wanted a full pint, and then I paid for it.
I think he's a better man than I say that, James.
It was a weird exchange.
But to afford this ring, Woody has to take up an extra job, which surprises Sam because the sort of work of a bartender is actually pretty extensive hours, you know?
Yes, it's at least 10-hour days, isn't it?
Start early, end late kind of vibe.
How are you going to afford that on your salary?
Well, don't worry, Sam. I'm getting a night job.
You gonna go do another job if you leave here at 2:30 in the morning?
Yep. Graveyard shift.
Where?
Graveyard, Sam. Gee whiz. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Woody, over the episode, hits fatigue, hits exhaustion, and then sort of hits deliria.
He's on the verge of becoming a kind of Tyler Durden type, isn't he?
Tyler Durden.
Off of Fight Club. Well, Tyler Durden is Brad Pitt's character, but we never hear Ed Norton's character's name. But essentially, Ed Norton type, the sleep-deprived, delirious.
If you went to that, and in my head, I went to Simpsons, which I think says a bit about us. You went Fight Club, I went Homer Simpson. Because it reminded me of the episode when he takes an extra job at the Quickie Mart to afford Lisa's horse or her pony. And then he falls asleep in the Quickie Mart with the closing doors going in on his head. Yeah. But that's kind of where his head's at. But obviously, an actual graveyard is it fuels a lot of imagination, I think you'd say.
Yeah, I used to live next to a graveyard. Walking past it, it was a spooky time. Whether you believe in spirits or the undead or any manifestation, whether you believe in that or not, it's still quite a dark place, isn't it? It's, you know, it's got connotations of negative things, death.
You know? And I think especially when you're in sort of a sleep-deprived state, you become more susceptible to these kind of experiences. And it's something which Norm and Cliff sort of, not necessarily capitalize on, but they sort of rejoice in teasing Woody about. And there's this scene where they're sort of, they're past closing time in the bar and Woody's like, I really got to close up. I got to get to my other job. And they're like, oh, it's only 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. The bar closes at 12:30 kind of thing. And they say, oh, watch out for the ghosts and stuff. And they talk about how the dead come alive, I think, and all this kind of stuff. Quite sort of, ghost story-esque, horror story-esque kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's boom, boom.
And then they leave the bar, and as Woody's closing up, there's the sort of screeching, cackling voice of Rebecca.
Help me.
But you know, it is going to be awfully lonely out there, Wood.
Oh, no, don't worry. You'll have plenty of company. Well, they won't be so talkative, what with their lips sewn shut.
Well, you don't actually have to see the bodies, do you? I mean, they're in the coffins, right?
Oh, yeah, most of them are. The ones that can afford it. Yeah, the rest of them, they put them in body bags or sometimes just a big roll of blotting paper. Yeah, sometimes they're just laying about the arms and legs akimbo. Yeah, the lips drawn in a ghastly rictus.
I don't know what rictus means, Mr. Blake.
You will by sunup, my guy.
Cut it out, guys.
All right, yeah, come on, we better toot along. Right, you know, I understand that, though, Norm, that the brain stays alive long after the body's lying in a coffin. Yeah, poor, desperate soul in there trying to scream out, don't bury me, I'm not dead yet!
But all they can muster is one final frantic gurgle.
Oh, the gurgle.
Listen for that gurgle, Woody. You listen for that gurgle.
Hey, you guys are just trying to scare me, all right? Forget it. I got a job to do. I got a ring to pay for. Get out.
Good night.
See you, Mr. Pearson, Mr. Clayton.
Want to take a cab?
Oh, man. Buried alive. Give me a break.
Woody, what's that one? Let me out of here.
And you said Woody has, what dog energy did you say Woody has?
Golden retriever.
And that's exactly what he does, as he sort of leaps across the bar and runs out.
What type of dog was Scooby-Doo?
I think he was animated.
Ah, yes.
We're both Googling the same thing though, aren't we?
Scooby-Doo dog breed, yeah. Great Dane. Of course it was, of course it was. Anyway, that night, or next morning, Woody is late at Cheers as two guys called in sick for the graveyard shift, didn't they?
And at the same time as Woody being late, or just before he arrives, a man comes to take bloods.
Bloods. I'm here for the bloods.
take bloods of the employees for the healthcare scheme.
Yeah, to the DNA samples or something. I don't know. To put them on record, who's to say?
To just check nothing's wrong with them before they insure them.
Oh, is that all it is?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Carl is quite initially a bit scared about this, which I think is quite new for Carla. I don't think we've established a fear of needles, but she points them in the direction of Norm, and Norm goes into the office and gives bloods pretty quickly.
It's all I can think of is the Tony Hancock. A pint? That's nearly an armful. That's a old reference there.
Yeah, Carla is dubious, and she doesn't really want to let this guy stick a needle in her. Woody sort of comes through the door, sleep-deprived, sort of very pale-looking already, quite disheveled, his hair's all over the place. He's not in a good way.
No, because we hear the spooky tale of Mrs. Jane Vanderhoven, beloved wife and mother.
I was hoping you'd give the full name.
The full name. Yeah. Name and relation, yeah.
Woody, man, you look terrible.
Yeah, I came straight from the graveyard. This is the worst night yet.
Why was that, dude?
Well, a couple of guys called in sick, and then we couldn't seem to bury old Mrs. Jane Vanderhoven, beloved wife and mother. It's like she didn't want to go down. First, a backhoe broke, and we had to dig the hole by hand, and then the ground was frozen and broke the handle on the shovel. And then the coffin kept popping open. You never get used to that, Sam.
I don't suppose you do.
And then when we finally buried old Mrs. Jane Vanderhoven, beloved wife and mother, there was this strange gurgling sound, and I knew it was probably just old Gus finishing his shake, but you don't want to take chances on something like that, so I had to dig her up and check it. What a night.
Yeah, so Woody is sort of not the man he was. He's not particularly happy anymore. He's not really himself. And when Carla volunteers him to get his bloods taken, he just sort of willingly follows into the office and then returns out of the office and says, "Where's my money?"
Last time he gave blood, which was earlier that day or the previous night, someone paid him for his blood. I assume the person who paid him for blood, for some reason, needed other person's blood. I'd assume it's because this person had to pass some kind of drug test.
Yeah, maybe.
is what I assume. From watching enough shows and films to know that when you pay for someone's bodily fluids, that's probably the reason why.
Well, no, not always. People in America, we have voluntarily blood giving.
Yes.
For
blood,
medical
the blood vans.
In America, they'll pay you for it.
Okay.
So you can give it to hospitals, but you can get paid for your blood. This happens in The Simpsons.
This is news to me.
I mean, I am getting that from The Simpsons when Bart sells his blood on Thanksgiving Day.
I think you'll find it's bloods.
There is a great line in this episode, which is...
Where's my money?
What?
Come on, you know the routine. I did this earlier. I give you blood, you give me money.
You gave blood already today?
I didn't give it. I sold it. Hey, I got a ring to pay for, damn you.
I just love that.
You think these bloods are free?
I didn't give it. I sold it. I got a ring to pay for.
Frasier is surprised he isn't hallucinating.
Frasier is probably the most concerned person in the bar.
He's a doctor.
He's a doctor. And he says, "You're suffering from lack of blood, lack of sleep. I'm surprised you're not hallucinating." And then we kind of get revealed that Woody is basically hallucinating.
Thinks he's covered in ants.
Yeah, he does. Well, Kelly comes in, and then we realize that the Gaines family celebration is tonight. It's now, essentially.
I think at that point, they could just let Woody sleep through his shift, you know, out of care. Who's it going to be? Sam and Rebecca? I think they'd be lenient enough to do that.
Nah.
What we do get as a nice little cutaway is Frasier trying to console Carla about the process. Mm-hmm. So he tries to demonstrate on Lilith what the procedure is, and he can't find a vein on Lilith.
Yeah, it's quite a funny moment. Any scene between Frasier and Lilith this season I've really enjoyed. There's quite a few little moments, but they're always good. But then Frasier goes on to sort of explain quite in detail the process to Carla as a way to almost trick her. And he describes it in so much detail that she faints. And then he says, "She's good to go. Get her in the office."
I think we'll play that because he has some choice words.
"Look into my eyes and listen very carefully to every word I say. All he's going to do is plunge this large bore needle into your tissue until it reaches a vein, at which point the beating of your heart will cause your blood to gush into this vial, filling it with a viscous crimson syrup. There you go, top her off."
"Thank you.
It's my pleasure."
Meanwhile, Woody, to kind of restart his energy, throws coffee in his own face. Which John knows me well enough now to understand it when I say it feels like something I'd do. And I'd be surprised if he were to argue with that, John.
Yeah, I think that's a fair enough statement. And I think Woody's reply, I think, is really good in this bit as well, which is, boy, it's true what they say, caffeine does get you going. As he's sort of drenched in sort of coffee over his face. Yeah, definitely your vibe there, I reckon.
I'm an erratic man. Woody has a nap in the car on the way to the party. You know, he's managed to get dressed up, clean himself up. Slowly his blood will come back. But he has a nap in the car and claims he has his second wind. Mr. Gaines. And Mr. Gaines doesn't say much this episode, but what he does say is gold.
Woody, good to see you.
Ah, good to see you too, Mr. Gaines, sir.
How do you do, Mr. Gaines? I'm Sam.
No, don't introduce yourself to me.
Oh, that's right. We met.
No, I just don't care who you are.
Yeah, he's got no time for Sam, really, in this episode.
Then Kelly's grandmother enters. Woody freaks out as he thinks she is Mrs. Jane Vanderhoven, beloved wife and mother. Celeste Holm plays the grandmother. Interestingly, she plays Mr. Gaines' mother in this episode, but she also had a role in Three Men and a Baby as Ted Danson's character's mother. Ted Danson being Jack. I feel now cast list. Celeste Holm as Grandmother Gaines. She made her screen debut in 1946, John. She appeared in Three Little Girls in Blue. That was her film debut. Carnival in Costa Rica. The Snake Pit. Champagne for Caesar. Honestly, Celeste. The Tender Trap. As the World Turns. High Society. Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Dr. Kildare. Burke's Law. The Fugitive. The Streets of San Francisco. Death Cruise. Columbo. The Love Boat. Wonder Woman. Fantasy Island. Trapper John M.D. Archie Bunker's Place. Magnum P.I. As we've said, Three Men and a Baby. Spencer for Hire, Touched by an Angel, Whoopi, and many more. Her last role was in 2015 in College Debts as Grandma Gigi. That's a long-spanning career, that is. Jackie Swanson as Kelly Gaines, Richard Doyle as Walter Gaines, Cy Richardson as Gordon. He also appeared in My Brother's Wedding, Repo Man, Hill Street Blues, Sid and Nancy, Dead Man Walking, They Live, Wings, Becker, Human Nature, ER, Dragnet, Charmed, The Shield, Monk, Chocolate News, Pushing Daisies, Larry Crown, Resortian Isles, NCIS, Benched, Like Family, Family Reunion, and many more. Gordon is the insurance man. Paul Wilson as Paul Crapence, Mark Epstein as waiter. He also appeared in The Equalizer, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Life Goes On, The Race, and Bernie. And Bernadette Burkett is uncredited as the voice of Vera Peterson. Bernadette Burkett, of course, being George Wendt's wife.
What a cast for a party, you know?
Yeah.
And this is what this episode delivers on, because we get the Gaines... I do think it is an estate.
Yes, I think estate is the correct term.
We get to revisit there. That is the set which we've visited a few times now. Normally we see it in a party atmosphere, which means... catering.
Nom 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 nom.
And Cliff and Norma straight in on the foods. What do you think of the food buffet, James?
I'll eat it, you know. I don't, yeah, fine.
They're thrown off by the tongue. So
I've had ox tongue.
I've turned away from ox tongue before.
A friend of mine once said about eating ox tongue. When eating ox tongue, it's like an abstract version of kissing a cow.
I'm not sure what noises you just made there, James.
it was a laugh then a wistfulness
that time you kissed a cow.
It was a laugh then a, oh, I should not have said that. You know,
that's making the edit.
what is the wistful?
Yeah. Long pause after you go. Oh, I'm not even going to say it. I don't want to make that sound bite.
It's just a regret of what I said. I've not kissed a cow.
Anyway, Cliff and Norma sort of talking about this buffet. They say maybe they've wasted their culinary years on pretzels and potato chips at the bar, and now they can't broaden their horizons to, I think they say, an educated palate. And then they just sort of mess around with the food. They play with their food.
They do.
They have a good time with it as well.
Norm puts big ass olives. Norm puts something which looks like olives or plums maybe in his eyes. And I think he's pretending to be FDR because he says Little Orphan Annie. And I think he's pretending to be FDR.
Oh, I took it a different way.
Who did you think?
I thought he was trying to do Little Orphan Annie. And then I searched that. And I saw that in the comics, of Little Orphan Annie. She's drawn with no pupils. She's drawn with just hollow eyes.
Yours makes more sense. Cut what I said out. Mine's nonsense.
And it was like, it was at one point, it was like the trademark of the illustrator, which was Harold Gray, was these sort of hollow, emotionless eyes.
Oh. Look,
more like Cliff, I'd say. The blanks of the eyes of the characters in Little Orphan Annie almost became Gray's signature, leaving the reader to interpret the mood themselves. That's a little quote from the Cartoonist website. The Cartoonist.
Well, I tell you what, you did deeper research than me. I just went, yeah, it's probably a president of some kind.
I think it doesn't matter either way, because I think Cliff does upstage him and just goes, I can't see it, I'm a cataract. It comes out looking like a sort of Hammer Horror-esque zombie. Yeah.
I think Finger Guns came after Cheers, but Norman Cliff, they feel like Finger Guns type guys, don't they?
I want to see if that's true. Did Cheers predate the Finger Guns? I don't think that's possible. I like to think that Finger Guns were like predate the handshake chips.
Yes, but I'm, yeah. Predate that. Do you want to know the origins of the high five?
Go on then.
It comes from baseball. Dusty Baker and Glenn Burke of the LA Dodgers, October 2nd, 1977, when they were celebrating, you know, due to winning a game. What's interesting, or at least I find it notable, is that one of the two was gay, Dusty Baker and Glenn Burke. So the high five was partly invented by a gay man, which I think goes unnoticed, doesn't come up how that impacted culture and history. And the high five is a very common thing, so it should get noticed.
There you go, you learn something new every day. I thought you were going to say it was a wave, but too close.
It was a Mexican wave, but it was out of time.
No, I mean just like a wave.
That might have been what they were going for. But people went, oh, I like that. I like what's happened there.
But after all this tomfoolery between Cliff and Norm playing with the food, Sam comes in and sticks a bit of tongue in his mouth like James did, pretends to kiss a cow and waves it around. And they go, we did that before.
Yeah, he impersonates a dog, doesn't he? Lot of dog things in this episode. Lot of dog motifs.
We return to sort of Woody's chaotic seeing of Kelly's gran and thinking that she's Mrs. Jane Vanderhoeven.
Mrs. Jane Vanderhoeven, beloved wife and mother.
That's the one I'm on about. And thinks it's her and goes into this sort of chaotic frenzy state where he's sort of scared and horrified because he thinks the woman he buried last night is going to come and get him. Sam tries to sort of talk him down from this, and she comes over and says, Woody, I've heard so much about you.
You're Woody Boyd, aren't you?
Since Sam, she remembers me.
Kelly's told me so much about you. So you're interested in getting married. Perhaps you and I should have a little talk in private.
That's a good idea. We should sit down and do that sometime.
We have no time like the present. Why don't you join me in the library? Right in here.
Tell my parents I love them.
And they both go into the side room.
He's very nervous.
Yes, which you know, you would be in this situation normally. He's heard of her as sort of the head of the house in some ways, you know.
She's a powerful matriarch.
And they're having sort of a fairly pleasant conversation until it takes this sort of slight, strange turn.
Where she notices he's nervous and then she goes, why are you nervous, Woody? Is it because you tried to bury me? And at that point, I went, wait, is she? What's happening? I was confused then.
I was confused as well. In my head, what I thought had happened was, I feel like especially the last few episodes, there's been a lot of like flash forwards or dream sequences of Sam's child and those kind of things. I thought Woody had fallen asleep and I'd imagine this was going to wake up and she'd be unimpressed by him asleep on the couch during the conversation.
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was a hallucination of his.
But she just left her hearing aid in the party so she could listen in on people and overheard him expressing this fear that she is. I'm going to try for it. Mrs. Jane Vanderhoeven, beloved wife and mother.
Good
I
job.
I said that a bit Canadian, I think.
Sure.
Vanderhoeven.
Vanderhoof.
And she just likes pranking him.
I'll tell you what, the women in the Gaines family are mischievous, aren't they? Kelly's mother, the grandmother. So Kelly's got a mischievous streak.
Marrying Frenchmen.
Millions of people do that every year.
not when they're going out with someone else.
That's true.
What we find out through this sort of experience is Kelly's grandma has a sort of appreciation for Woody for being sort of...
standing up to her because he almost attacks her after the time.
This young man may be gullible. Oh, well, let's be honest, slow. But he had the backbone to stand up to me, which no one else in the family's ever had the courage to do. I think you're going to be very good for Kelly. In fact, I think you're going to be good for all of us. I give you my blessing. Welcome to the family. Now let's eat.
Yeah, take that, Walter.
She also writes someone out of the will, and we never find out what he did or what was said, but he just probably sort of gets shamed out of the room a little bit and sort of
just bad-mouthing her, I'd imagine.
Maybe, yeah. And that's sort of how that story ends, which is sort of this positive note of the parties went all right.
Woody then rolls himself up in a rug.
Yeah, I'll go to sleep now. Rolled up in a carpet. What better way to end an episode?
Yeah.
I tell you what better way, James, with the last scene.
It's usually how it goes, isn't it?
Which is back in the bar. Rebecca is now freed from being within the walls of Cheers and is talking to Paul, and Paul sort of says,
$10, I'll tell you how to get even with Carla for closing you up in the wall.
Okay.
Here's a purse. Toss it back into the duct. When she goes in after it, screw the vent cover back on.
Oh, that's a good idea. Wait a minute. That's my purse.
Sorry.
Oh, God.
We've got mail, John.
All right, Meg Ryan. Is that right? Is Meg Ryan's in You've Got Mail?
Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. Yeah. But as usual, before we open our letters, we have to give a shout out to our norms on Patreon. So this goes out to Treb Curry. If you want that special norm treatment, then check out our Patreon page for that and so much more. Well, here's first one here. Which singer-songwriter was rumored to be a gravedigger?
Oh.
I can give you clues.
Yeah, give me a clue.
Let's go
Tom
for
Tom Jones.
No, but similar era, big in the 70s
Rod
and 80s.
Stewart.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I don't there know how go. I got that. I really don't.
I thought that would last a bit longer than that, but no, you got it. Yeah.
There you go. Look the type, I'd say. He had lots of rings.
It does, yeah. It was a long-held rumor about him, but in his 2012 autobiography, he said that this was a tale he'd gone along with, but in reality, he only measured out plots with string during a couple of Saturdays, so more a grave measurer than a grave digger.
James, I've got a question for you. What is the record for being buried alive?
As in amount of time?
Yes.
Is it Dynamo?
No, I'm looking for a number of days.
No, it's Dynamo, the one who did it. I'm going to say...
Not the one that I've got here.
3 weeks?
No,
that's too long. 8 days?
No.
Five?
No.
Am I getting further away?
Yes.
Oh, 40 days, like Noah.
No.
Oh, I give up then.
142 days is what I've found online. Although what I've seen is they've also said he plans to do an extra 8 to make 150.
Who dis?
This was Geoff Smith, the Mole Man from Mansfield. He got buried under a pub.
Did he have like the kind of freeze-dried food that astronauts have then?
I assume so, or maybe a little tunnel pipe. He was under a pub, so...
Well, yeah, when you say buried alive...
I like to think that...
I just think he was underground.
I like to think, James, that this woman was pouring a pint and she got halfway through the pint and then realised, oh man, I got to send some food down the funnel.
I'd left Josh downstairs. Ugh. Here we go, another question. What model is the furnace?
It is a little Diablo.
Uh-huh. What colour?
I don't know. Grey.
Grey.
Yeah.
Any other details? I mean, you've got the points. I'm just curious how far you can go.
There's no... it hasn't been... What's the word? Checked on, ever.
It's from a Guatemalan thing, yeah. But a full docked forced air model, 55,000 BTUs.
Leads nicely into my question for you, James. What does BTU stand for?
British Thermal Unit. Well, oh, we got a final letter here. Well, if your furnace isn't working and you want to keep toasty and warm, how about that warm feeling you get from Zencaster, John?
Huh? Well, yeah.
Yeah, and when you have, you know, you might want to do these family gatherings, but we know, you know, people are all over the world these days, so why not call them on Zencaster, where you can keep in touch that way. You can record podcasts like we are doing. We've had a great time. Very user-friendly, isn't it?
Yeah, I love using Zencaster. It's user-friendly. It's a great way for us to do our podcasts. We release them weekly, and to keep with that schedule, we need a platform which is easy to use, straightforward, and helps us focus on the content we want to talk about rather than worry about too many technical things.
So if you want to get on Zencaster, use the code NORM to get 30% off your first month of any Zencaster paid plan, because we want to hear about your experiences. House special time!
Last call at the bar, James. I don't know what to have this episode. Cataracts.
What about zombie?
Oh, the zombie's cocktail. A good shout. A zombie cocktail.
It's like five rum or something like that, isn't it?
Who are we toasting to, though, James? The happy couple?
Celeste Holm.
Yes, she did a great guest spot in this episode. I hope she comes back for the wedding itself. Yeah. That'd be nice to see. We should really toast Mrs. Jane Van Der Hoeven, beloved wife and mother as well, whilst we're doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
This has been Where Nobody Knows Your Name, a Cheers podcast. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.